pop couture.
The following show is intended for mature audiences and adult pop culture nerds. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Pop Couture, the show that undresses popular culture. I am your host, Aaron Jade Eigel.
I'm your co-host, Joe Schrum.
And I'm your third co-host, Mike Rocco.
Your third co-host?
Third co-host.
It's good to be back. You know, the first three episodes we released all together by the time you're hearing this one. But we're still kind of in like the pre-production and kind of getting the kinks worked out. But we're having a lot of fun. And if you're still listening to now, which should be episode 4, thank you so much for, you know, sticking with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just coming back from a week off. I went up to Michigan to see my girlfriend, which was awesome, but
yeah, kind of
played a little havoc. Yeah, it did. Played a little havoc with our schedule, but we are now back and we are ready.
Indeed. So, Mike, what have you been up to?
You know what I've been doing, actually? It was something that I've been meaning to do for a while, and just cleaning.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Cleaning house. I was actually downstairs most of today, and I actually forgot how much I actually enjoy the act of cleaning.
Yeah.
It's the starting that sucks.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Actually being like, all right, time to clean. But if I was more like on top of it, I actually enjoy it. It's something that I, putting things in order and, you know, wiping things down and, you know, making everything clean and neat and organized. I actually do like that. I wish my drawing was as easy.
Mm-hmm.
Getting everything clean.
Yeah, that's the same with my work. It's sometimes it's easier to just, you know, put in my podcast and just go around the house, just clean everything up and just kind of go on cruise control and just get everything clean. It's like you get such a great feeling of accomplishment and you're not like mentally drained by the end of it usually.
Yeah, for real. I wish it was that way with music sometimes. I mean, it kind of is, but like the process of creating a song front to back can be a bit tedious when you're doing it solo.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Like you have it in your head. You can hear it. You just mm-hmm. need to like get it out of your head. But you already know exactly the notes you need. You just have to put it down.
Yeah, just gotta just make them reality. So
indeed. All right. And then over the past over the past 2 weeks, I haven't been very excited. Very exciting. Just playing more Warcraft with with the friends. But I recently picked up the paintbrushes again. I've been doing some more painting.
Wow, oh, nice.
Yeah.
Your models or like actual painting?
Yeah, my Warhammer models.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which I don't think I've talked about my obsession with Warhammer on the show yet, but I'm sure it will come up again and again and again and again over the course of pop culture. Yeah, no, that's one of my big loves in this mortal coil. So I've been, I took a little sabbatical from painting, needed a break, but I'm back doing it. And the manager at my local games workshop was thrilled to see me spending money again.
Yeah, I bet.
Other than that, exciting news before we get into it.
Okay.
On the day of recording here, which is May 9th, 2023, for those keeping score at home, it's a Tuesday here, sunny day, Cleveland, Ohio. I finally heard back from my doctor, and I finally got insurance approval for a big, exciting surgery and the next chapter of my life, and very excited.
Woo!
That's awesome.
Raise the roof.
So going to be scheduling that soon with the office, and that's exciting.
That's great. I'm really happy for you.
Oh, thank you. All right, but that's not what we're here to discuss. We have some really exciting topics for this week, so please take it away.
Okay. So I came up with this topic while going through Amazon. I was going through my wish list, and I saw something that on the, you know, recommended for you list that just basically just triggered a massive amount of nostalgia for me. So I thought it'd be a good topic for the show. So let me set the stage first. So I'm taking you back to New Mexico, the 1980s. There is a writer there done a few things, a couple of novels, a couple of screenplays, a couple of TV shows by the name of George R.R. Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this
very
is...
obscure author. Very obscure.
Well, at the time he was. So this is 10 years before, roughly 10 years before he publishes Game of Thrones, 25 years before Game of Thrones becomes a TV show. So he's just, you know, he's just a writer in New Mexico, you know, just trying to make a living. Over the course of 2 years, he and a bunch of his writer friends start this massive role-playing campaign for a game called Superworld, which was basically a role-playing game for superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
During the course of these 2 years, he and his writer friends really develop these characters and think, hey, you know what? This would actually be a cool story. We should make this into a book. So they get their characters together. They refine the characters. They refine the story, and they come up with this. So let me set the stage of the stories now. So in 1946, 1 year after World War II ends, a race of human-looking aliens develop a bioweapon that they want to use to make themselves the powerhouse of the galaxy. This bioweapon is a airborne virus, which, harsher in hindsight.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. You know, everything is foreshadowed in history, I guess. An airborne virus that rewrites DNA and should, theoretically, turn them into superhumans. But they have to test it.
Full pause.
And they do not. Yes.
This is Resident Evil.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You're describing the plot of Resident Evil.
Well, then they stole it from George. So,
they probably did. I'm sorry. I just wanted to throw that quip in there. Please continue.
No, that's fine. That's fine. So these aliens do what, you know, any superpower does. They go out to find someone to experiment on. So they come across Earth, and they find that, hey, we humans are almost genetically similar enough to them that we would be good test subjects. So in 1946, the virus is released in New York City, Ground Zero. And the results aren't great.
Mm-hmm.
So of every 100 people who get infected, 90 die brutally. Their bodies cannot handle the virus rewriting their DNA, and most of them die horribly. Of that 100, so 90% die. 9%, their bodies get warped. Like, they survive their DNA being rewritten, but it's not pretty. Like, sometimes it can be simple as, hey, suddenly, you know, you look like, you know, a dog. Or, you know, you've got two heads, or suddenly, like, even clapping your hands breaks your bones. So it just completely just screws up your body and just makes living horrible. And then one person out of 100 gains superpowers. So now there is no rhyme or reason to who dies, who gets mutated, and who gets superpowers. So the virus is dubbed the wild card virus. So, because no one knows what you're going to draw when you get infected. Anybody who dies says they draw the Black Queen. Anybody who becomes mutated becomes a Joker, or is called the Joker. And anybody who gets superpowers is called an ace. And then there's also aces who get, like, useless powers, like, hey, I can turn my hair blue, or hey, I can live. I have telekinetic powers, but just strong enough to lift a pen. They're called deuces.
Mm.
So, you know, yeah. So then from there, obviously history changes. So, you know, little things change, like Gandhi is saved from assassination. Fidel Castro, instead of becoming, you know, the dictator of Cuba, becomes a baseball player in New York, which apparently Fidel Castro was actually a pretty decent baseball player. And you know, there's like legends and myths in history that, like, hey man, if he'd just been scouted by the right person, none of the things in Cuba would have happened, which isn't true, but it's you know, it's fun little stories. And then also, so the books are just basically told from the viewpoint of various aces, jokers, humans, and aliens, because, you know, there's aliens in this universe. throughout the decades. And one of the interesting things about these books is that they're mosaic. So like there's not one writer. So each book is basically like a mini series or a TV series where they're going towards a specific end, but each story, each character is written by a different author. So like, for example, in one book, one group of characters is trying to stop, you know, a cult from sacrificing a bunch of women, while another group is trying to locate some incriminating evidence from the local crime lord. But they all kind of mash up and intersect in various different ways throughout the course of the story. So it's really cool. It's really interesting. This series ran from 1980s. The original series ran from 1987 to 1985 with 15 novels. I really enjoyed the first 12. The last three, they're fine. It's basically a trilogy. But whereas the first novels were more, you know, grounded in you know, quotation marks here, mm-hmm. You know, low level street fighting kind of stuff. The last three are like this big global conspiracy, you know, QAnon-esque Illuminati figures, you know, trying to destroy all the wild cards, which, you know, again, it is fine, but I've, especially now, you know, with QAnon and all that stuff, I'm not a big fan of the whole secret society stuff like that. So
yeah, it's too real right now.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the original series ended in 95, and then in 96, Game of Thrones was published. So, you know, George had other interests by then. And I moved on too. And throughout the years, there were various little comic book miniseries that were published, which to varying degrees of quality. A lot of it was just, you know, fan service and everything. So I'd already read the book, so it's like you're not really showing me anything new. But anyway, but going back to Amazon, I find out that two new graphic novels set in the Wild Cards universe are being published. And so it's like, oh shit, Wild Cards is back. And then I go back and I look through it, and actually Wild Cards has been back since 2002. They had been publishing under a new publisher, actually several different publishers. So they did two books, one in 2002, one in 2006. And then since 2008, they've done 13 more novels. So it's like, oh, cool. And these are all new characters. It's like new generations of Wild Cards, of aces and jokers and everything. Cause in this universe, you know, the characters actually age out. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the graphic novels coming out. They're on pre-order for me. They come out in a couple of months. And then I think I might also go back and, you know, look for the older novels that were published, like, you know, in the early aughts, and just see like, hey, how did these turn out? Are these going to be good? And I might even start revisiting the old novels from like the 80s and 90s. So
I'm looking at this on Wikipedia right now. Mm-hmm. If people heard me typing in the background, it's usually me on Wikipedia. But this is so cool. I did not know this franchise existed.
Yeah.
And I would be shocked if this didn't have a big influence on what would become Resident Evil or Biohazard. Because what we see from a lot of Japanese developers, especially places like Capcom and Konami in that era, mm-hmm. Those developers were hugely influenced by Western and specifically American pop culture. So I would be really surprised, because this is like, because if my suspicion is true, then Resident Evil basically copied Wild Card's homework to a T. That's so cool. Yeah. I'm hooked. Yeah, I'm going to look into this now.
Yeah, you really should. Like, especially the original series from, like, you know, like I said, 87 to 95. I actually found them in my high school library. So I found them, I think, let's see, 92, 91, 92. And actually, I actually ended up purchasing them from the library when they were, you know, getting rid of old books. And I was like, oh, hey, can I buy these? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, a buck for each of them. It's like, all right, awesome. So yeah, I've been a fan since high school. Like I said, I dropped off because I didn't realize that you know, a new book series that started in the early aughts. I also looked it up. It's been optioned for television since 2016. It started with HBO, since that's where, you know, Game of Thrones started. Then it moved to Hulu, and now it's at Peacock as of right now. So, you know, we'll see if anything comes of that. But I think it'd be an interesting series to have. You know, I think it could be like a flagship series almost, because, you know, Amazon has done something similar, like with Carnival Row, you know, misfit superheroes or superhumans just trying to exist in the real world. So yeah, it's an interesting series, and I recommend everybody check it out, especially the original series, because it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I see it's currently being published by Tor Books, which is
yes.
Good vibes, because there's a lot of great nerd books that come out of Tor.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I love Tor Publishing. Mike, let's throw the talking stick to you, because I've been like, oh, Resident Evil the whole time, and Joe's been talking about like this franchise.
Joe, you mentioned that recently you looked through your old Amazon wish list.
And, yeah.
Like, it was stuff that you added like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I went into mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea what I was thinking or why I was feeling a certain way.
Yeah.
So like
yeah.
Some of the things are like one of the things I liked, I guess, because from an aesthetic point of view, it would have been cool to just have one, whether it was practical or not. I mm-hmm. doubt it was an oil lamp.
Huh.
Like
really?
An old fashioned oil lamp that you could put like oil in and burn it like your. I don't know, I'm writing some, like, the Declaration of Independence or something, like an old oil lamp. Like, they still make them. It's you like, know, like huh. those, the little things with the basin, and then they have, like, the white flowery-looking glass attachment. Yeah. And I'm like, why?
Listen, you're like, just really into Hamilton.
Yeah, my dearest yeah. Martha, I write to you, you know, from Concord on the snowy, you know, January yeah. morning.
I write like to William Tecumseh Sherman during the Civil War.
Yeah, there you go.
Winfield Scott, too old for the American Army. We should replace, you know, like contact yeah. Lincoln. It's coincidental because you just mentioned that, like, I looked like it was about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why? Like stuff, why did I think I want this? I mean, I must have added it like actually mm-hmm. in the grand scheme of things not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
maybe less than 5 years ago, so I don't know where I was circa. It was, you know what it was, it was a different time. It was before the pandemic.
Yeah,
life mm-hmm. was more carefree. I was like, you know what, screw it, oil lamps.
yeah,
not realizing that my priorities would be changing in the coming years. It's funny, lately, I think the one thing I've realized, because, you know, my occupation is drawing. My day-to-day is usually drawing
mm-hmm.
For, you know, jobs or for studios or for shows or what have you. But I forgot that I actually just really like to draw for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do it very often. I don't draw for the sake of it. I had a friend of mine tell me once, you know, you don't have to post every single thing you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, that's so true. Like, why do I feel inclined? So like lately, the one thing I've been doing a lot is just doing studies, just like sitting down and also drawing on paper,
mm-hmm.
which I don't do very often. I don't draw a lot on paper, old school. So I grab old, I love these, like you could get them at like CVS. They're like cheapo, crappy pens. But I like just drawing with, like, you know, and the thing is, I'm doing little things, like I'm doing the little, like, I had to get used to not doing, like, let me zoom in.
Yeah.
With my fingers.
Or like tapping the Apple Pencil to switch tools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
why isn't this paper? Yeah. Why isn't this paper working?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, oh, it's terrible. But like, I actually really missed it. I fell out of it because when I got super busy,
mm-hmm.
I was so busy working that I just was working, because I work everything on the computer. I have a Cintiq, my big screen that I draw on,
mm-hmm.
or I have my iPad if I'm doing like commissions or other, you know, side hustles. But I don't really have any opportunity because I don't own a scanner. I don't
really?
Own a scanner. I don't own a printer. I haven't owned a printer or a scanner since it's been 10 years. I haven't had one since before I moved to LA. So I just never had a need for one, or never felt like I needed one.
Yeah.
But like, I have no way of really scanning my art, but like, you know, I'll just, if I do a little doodle that I like, I'll take a picture of it and save it and send it to a friend or whatever. But mm-hmm. I really miss, there's certain things, like certain things I want to pick up. Like, I haven't worked in about 7 months. So like, I don't know what's stopping me from like just taking out a jigsaw puzzle, because I miss doing jigsaw puzzles.
Aww.
I miss mm-hmm. doing, you know, little hands. I miss sculpting. I used to sculpt.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I used to sculpt. I took a maquette sculpting class, and you make an armature and you put the clay on. And the problem is that I don't have the capacity or the place to, because normally if you're going to be doing any kind of casting,
mm-hmm.
Or any kind of mold making, you need like one of those pressure bins that you put something in and
yep.
it brings the, you know, and you, it takes the bubbles out and
well
everything.
Well acquainted with those shits.
Yeah, but like I'm in an apartment. I don't have a garage. I don't have like a place where I can use that, like a pressure pot or anything like that. So I just sculpt and then like it sits there and then that's it. You know, mm-hmm. like I don't really do anything. I haven't sculpted in a while, and there's a couple things I really should just get back into. You mentioned earlier Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't play a lot of video games, but I've been playing a couple video games here and there.
Really?
And I don't play very often, but
yeah, I was going to say.
I just played, everyone's hyped for the new Zelda, and I just played like my first Zelda game for the first time like 2 months ago. I never really played. I beat it too, and I was mm-hmm. like, I tried playing like Breath of the Wild, and I've tried it twice, and I just for some reason lost the momentum, and then only got like an hour in, and then never did anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I went and played. I never played Banjo-Kazooie before, and I tried playing that.
Whoa,
and that was fun. I never played it.
I bet you would have liked it. Knowing you, I can guarantee you
I like old-timey 3D platformers. Yeah. I like first-gen 3D stuff. I think it's kind of charming, the aesthetic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one game I just – it's funny. I told friends, and their eyes bugged out of their heads because I don't know anything about it. I've somehow, over the last couple of years, had absolutely no I don't know anything about the lore, even though there's so much art of it or anything. I'm just avoiding it. And I finally bought it with the intention to play it. Undertale. I've never played it.
Oh,
so, like,
okay.
I have it saved on my, I have it on Steam, and I'll play it. But everyone's telling me like how I should be playing the game, or like, oh my God. Cause yeah. I guess people are desperate to see people's first reactions to this game
yeah.
and how they take it. But like, I'm not going to record myself or stream myself playing it, cause I'm going to get backseat gamers telling me what I should and shouldn't do. So this is just, my level-headed friends were like, go into it raw, just play it straight. Don't let anything interfere, just play it. It's like a five-hour game. Just play it. And it's weird. I'm trying to find hobbies again. I don't really I haven't really had an opportunity or let myself have an opportunity to really just like loosen up. I'm always, even when I'm not working, I'm somehow working.
Yeah.
So I'm never taking a break. I never take time off. But I would like to find a balance now to like, let me do a jigsaw puzzle. I miss doing 2,000 piece jigsaw puzzles. I used to do the photo mosaic puzzles.
Oh really?
Where it'd be like, it would be like hundreds and hundreds of tiny little images, but
I can't do that.
I love that kind of stuff. I have just do what I have. I have a lot of things that are half formed things that like, or errands I need to run, but because it costs money or because it mm-hmm. takes time. Like, I have a pile of art that needs to be framed, and I have to have it custom framed because, of course, nobody ever makes art at an actual size that you could put in a frame. It's
naturally
always a weird dimension, so I have to custom frame it or custom mat it or whatever. Or, but I mentioned before, just cleaning. I realize how just cleaning up makes a clearer mind. Like, now going downstairs, I'm not, like, overwhelmed by the amount of cardboard boxes and old mail. The worst is, do what I hate. I realize if there's a way I can get myself like to never get them again, I'd be so happy. Like circulars.
Oh,
like
tell me about it.
Coupons for like for like Jack in the Box and like on newsprint paper and like coupons for fruit. Like, I don't need them. Like, and they fill up my mailbox, and then I have to, they just take up space and I have to throw them all away. And I just threw out a pile of mail, of junk mail, that's been just sitting on top of my next, the table next to my front door. It was like, I'm gesturing yay high, but it's about like a foot high of just literally just crap. Like,
I feel just, like the measurement of yay high is like a very, like, very apt descriptor for like, at least like the American regional dialect. Like, I feel like a lot of people in America know exactly what yay high means.
Yeah.
Can it fit, the old phrase, the, can it fit in a, the, is it bigger than a bread box?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's on yonder.
Yeah.
From stem to stern.
That's a good one.
From stem to stern.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but yeah, the amount of newsletters and PBS donation letters and, you know, I know this is a tangent. My last thing I would say, do what I also really hate. This is turning into my George Carlin things I could do without bit.
No, go off.
Mail that looks like it's a handwritten letter, but it's clearly like crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's becoming more prevalent now, where it's like, you know, and it's like, it's written in like, I don't know. I almost want to call it like its own font, like Mother's Script. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, where you look at it at a glance and you think, oh, my mom sent me. And then you realize, oh, no, this is for
it
like.
It does. Yeah, no, like it actually does look like my mother's handwriting. Yeah.
Right. It's like optical. It's like, like a local optometrist. And I'm like, why are you making me like reminisce about my dear old mom?
Yeah.
You know, in her gingham gown hanging laundry on the clothesline. And you see the golden wheat in the distance. Like, it makes, it's weird. It's like, why are you sending this nostalgic, old like letter, but it's for like, it's like spam.
Mm-hmm.
You open it up and it's like, you know, you're in, you know, life insurance. And I'm like,
great.
No. But yeah, that's really it for me. Oh, one last thing. I keep saying that you reached a milestone. You had a milestone. You had a doctor's visit thing. For me, I just submitted to my 50th.
Oh yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
50th
Yay!
Festival. I did a short film and it's, I just submitted it to my 50th festival, and I won't know until probably starting the end of next month if it's even been accepted into any of those festivals.
Uh-huh.
But I reached the goal. That was the goal I set for myself, was 50, and I've reached it. So huzzah, you know.
Huzzah! That's awesome.
Huzzah!
For the people just tuning in, tell us the name.
The film?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Sniff and Snoof. And it's this little, it's a film that I was working on, before the pandemic. I started it while I was working on Looney Tunes. And I just never, I would work on it between storyboards. And then I was, you know, I had a friend who was doing the music. And they, you know, they're professional musicians. So they have other obligations that were, you know, more prevalent and paying and more important. So like, it sort of took a backseat throughout like most of the pandemic, but it was done. Like, I finished it lock, stock and barrel over a year and a half ago. So I've just been waiting, and now it's done. It's been submitted. It's out in the world, not out in the world. I'll do like a public release probably at the end of the year, but for now it's submitting it to mostly children's festivals and animation festivals and comedy festivals, just everywhere. I just actually, the last festival I submitted to was in Bucharest.
Really?
It's because it's a film with no dialogue in it. It's all
I
can pretty much show it anywhere. I send it South Korea. It's on every. I've submitted to festivals on every continent. If there is one on Antarctica, I will submit it there.
Hell yeah. Just so you know, you should just email it there.
Email it. Say like, hey, I sent it to everywhere else. Just, this is a courtesy.
Yeah, it's like, hey, are you tired of watching penguins? Here, watch this.
Yeah.
if if the and I, maybe if there's a way I could send it in that faux mother's font on the email.
Yes.
Maybe they'll look at it and go, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, the grocery script font.
Yeah.
Grocery list, I should say.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's funny.
That's awesome. Congratulations. I mean, 50. Yes. That's huge. So, yeah, that's incredible. Just incredible.
Thank you. What about you, Aaron?
So, in our little group chat here, Joe mentioned that I should talk about, kind of on the same tangent as what it's like, rediscovering things. Joe suggested that, I should talk about what it's like being in a band again.
Yeah.
Because it's been some time since I've been in a band. It's like, I've been doing some solo composing and recording, and both of you have seen that and heard those songs before. You know, that sort of stuff. Like Mike, a year ago, I think I sent you like my demo tape, my sizzle reel, as it were.
Yeah.
And then that's one of the ways that we like professionally started bonding. And like, that's what, if anyone wonders how we met, we run in very similar circles. But being in a band again, it's you know, it's funny because I forgot, because, you know, being a solo musician for the past couple of years, being out of a band, because I was in a band for a long time. The band was called Seconds to Live. We were never huge, but in the local scene, we were like known entities, and I got recognized out a couple of times, and like, we were starting to do things and we were making a little bit of money and starting to do our thing. And then, you know, that ended because of, you know, interpersonal conflicts, and I being in a band is expensive and I ran out of money and just all the things. Yeah. And I was trying to finish college and trying to start my transition. And for all the reasons, Seconds to Live ended. And that ran from like 2013, 2014. And I did that all the way up until 2018. And then I was involved with the band until 2019, just sort of passively. And then all of the pandemic, you know, all of the bandmates just kind of went dormant because there was nothing for, there is not a lot for musicians to do, especially bands and like rock musicians, to do during the pandemic, like music that kind of depends on having a group. And I know there's exceptions to the rule, and I know I'm going to get emails about it, but calm down, you know, unclench.
I mean, I did enjoy when Nickelback did a sea shanty version of their Rockstar song, so, you know.
Yeah. Metallica did a full acoustic version of Blackened, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But fast forward to now, and me and the guitarist from Seconds to Live named Corey, we reach out to each other and we reconnect and we go out for coffee and we just talk about life. And then it gets to be around like 8, 9 o'clock at night. And he's like, you know, the mall's closing. Do you want to go hang out at my place? I was like, yeah, sure. And he lives like 10 minutes away from me now, which is awesome, because he used to live like an hour and 30 minutes away from me. And
oh, God.
We'd be halfway for band practice. So I just, you know, zip on over to his house and we jam and we have a lot of fun, like old times. And then I think about a month later, he's like, hey, you should come over and, you know, just lay down some drums for me and my buddy. We're going to do the band thing again. I was like, yeah, sure. I'll happily lay down drums, and asked if I wanted to help produce. I was like, absolutely. That's what I do. And so I play the drums. And or I guess before that, he gives me like 24 hours notice. And he's like, by the way, here's our demo tape. Can you learn this? Thanks. And so I did. And I go in. At this point, I hadn't touched a drum set in 5 years. So I was rusty, like rusty, rusty by my standard. And so, you know, I play the songs and the three of us have a lot of fun. His buddy Spider is the bassist and frontman. And then I was on drums with Corey on guitar. And, you know, something just like clicked, right? And it was just like, we knew that it was right. And then they extend the invitation to me and I accept. or I accepted, and, you know, we've been really, really grinding because we want to, this summer, we want to, you know, hit the ground running hard. And really, you know, we have a lot of like emotional and creative momentum, and we really want to use this summer to really just like kind of plant our flag, as it were. But being in a band again is, you know, it's kind of funny because I forgot about that sense of camaraderie, right, that you get being in a creative team, everyone coming together to make something together. And, you know, the feeling of you're all working together against a time limit. And because, you know, you have to get ready to do shows, you have to get ready for studio time, you have to, you know, you have to be like on, but, you know, your friends are right there supporting you the whole way. And it's like, the more and more you meet, the more you get together. And it's just like, pretty quickly, your band becomes the people in your life that you see the most outside of people you may live with. And there's this thing that I kind of live by where it's just like, the only people you should let into your band are the people you won't strangle at night when you're sleeping in a van. And I can happily say that I do not want either of that for my bandmates. So it's perfect, right?
Good, good.
Yeah.
Hopefully they feel the same.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But it's weird, right? Because since I've been in the band, the world really has changed. Last time I was in a band, TikTok did not exist. And now TikTok is like very integral to the music industry. Quite famously, Florence of Florence and the Machine, her record label actually postponed one of her releases as punishment because she didn't make enough TikToks. And it's like very much it. The labels treat it very toxically. For indie acts, we can really leverage it. So I find myself in this weird position where I have like a bunch of tabs open in Firefox over here of just like, what are like the most active like hashtags to use on TikTok for like people to discover your music. And it's just like ideas for bands where it's just like, oh, do a rig rundown, do a day in the life of this band member, go through a band member's playlist. And it's just like a bunch of like random, like kind of like writing prompts, but for TikToks. And you can probably tell by the way I'm talking, I do not like social media. I do not have much of a presence at all on social media. All my business comes in through word of mouth. I like being disconnected from social media for my mental health. So this is like really weird new territory for me.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a natural extension of what we used to do in Seconds to Live, because I would just follow us around with my shitty old iPhone camera and I would make like little low effort vlogs. And that's one of the main things that we did to like connect with the audience, which was like a big thing at the time. And so now this is just like the natural evolution of that. And so I'm having to learn this like new social platform. And like learning the ins and outs of it and everything while still practicing, while still getting my chops on drums back after 5 years away, while still writing, while still practicing, all those things. It's a lot of old and a lot of new all at once, which makes it exciting. And so hopefully we're going to be playing some shows in June. We have some studio time booked in June.
Nice.
Hopefully June through August we'll be, you know, pounding that pavement, as it were, before my surgery, hopefully in September. And where I definitely will not be drumming for some time.
No, no. Dude, yeah. If you even try, I'm going to drive up. No.
Here, kick my ass.
Back on the couch. Back on the couch. Just an instant.
I totally realize I have not said the name of the band yet. We are, the band name is the Dead Ex-Boyfriends Club. We snagged the URL.
Yes.
DXBF.club. DXBF.club. Let me just make sure that's right. Yes. DXBF.club, which I think is a very clutch URL. I'm still building it out right now. Like, it's, there's like almost nothing on it. I'm just like fucking around with it. But yeah, no, it's, being in a band again is very nostalgic because it's like, I really missed like playing music.
The sense and, of camaraderie of working, of working with other people in the band.
Yeah, exactly. That camaraderie of like, you meet up with your, you know, your best friends after a long day and you throw all your shit in a crappy van and you drive down to a punk house and you set up all your stuff in someone's basement. And then for an hour, you just like rock out as hard as you can. And then you pack everything back up into the van. You go to a 24-hour diner, find some cheap pizza, and then you go back home, sleep, and do it all over again.
Yeah, one of the first times we hung out together was at a Denny's diner. So
that's right.
I do enjoy the diners. Yeah, and
I love the Patton Oswalt bit where it's like you don't go to Denny's, you end up at Denny's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really sad because it's like since the pandemic, I feel like almost all the 24-hour places in Cleveland have since edited their hours or closed. Mm-hmm. Like, my go-to Denny's closed. The Denny's on the east side of town has closed. The other Denny's I can think of are no longer 24-hour. All the Steak and Shakes are no longer 24-hour. So it's just like, what the fuck am I going to do when I am, like, varying shades of inebriated at 2 in the morning? Yeah.
You know, the world is a different place and has affected us all when you're mourning Denny's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah,
I went to see a friend. She was in a play and afterwards, you know, we wanted to go out and celebrate. And it was already like 10, 11 o'clock and like half the places were closed. It was just like, you know, pre-pandemic, the part of town that we went to was like, you know, popping until like 2, 3 a.m. And now it's like, okay, you can come in, but we're only open for like another hour. And it's like, oh man, that sucks.
Yeah. Or you can come in, but our kitchen is closed. And it's just, like,
yeah,
oh,
basically.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I grew up in New York. So every diner was open until, you know, at least 12 or 1 in the morning. Now I'm out here in Burbank, which is like the California equivalent of like most of the people who lived here or at least ran this place were like widows of people who either worked at Disney or for Lockheed. Mm-hmm. So like in the 40s and 50s. So they're all these old people. So their hours, every place closes between like 9 and 10 o'clock.
Oh. Yeah.
Like if you want to go to an all night like diner and get a late meal, you have to drive off the beaten path to somewhere more like in LA or Hollywood proper. And I'd hate to go to, I hate going down there.
Oh, but yeah.
Having a haunt. It's like, sometimes I want to eat like pancakes at like 11 PM.
You know? I know. Right.
Like, mm-hmm.
Can I have that? Can I have an over easy egg?
Yeah.
In the light of the moon. Like, is that something that I can have? But no, it just doesn't.
No.
I foresee a future for myself where I am eating questionable quality Eggs Benedict with a wolf howling to a full moon in the background. That is the future I'm invoking for myself. That's what I want. Yeah. Make
that
it
sounds
happen,
fun.
Entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and if you get some French toast, if there's some French toast, I'll be there too.
Yeah.
Licking Worcestershire, not Worcestershire, Hollandaise sauce.
Yeah, Hollandaise.
Yeah.
While you faintly hear Africa by Toto on a dingy speaker in the background.
Yes.
In a dingy place that's lit by fluorescent lights.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
Yeah, that's the dream. As long as it's not Waffle House. I refuse to step foot in a Waffle House. I walked into a Waffle House one time. Uh-huh. The whole establishment stopped. I'm not kidding. You could almost hear the on the record player, like the needle getting dragged. Like
any movie that takes place at a biker bar where everyone stops and looks towards the door.
Yeah, really,
at a,
yeah,
literally, at a like Waffle House, because we got them all over here, and it's just like no one just like people barely acknowledge your existence.
Like in the SpongeBob movie, I walked into the salty spittoon, and all of a sudden, I was the bubble blown baby. And aww. I was just like, oh man. Mm-mm. So everyone just looks at me. I just like walk my happy ass out because I'm very soft. Like I play punk aww. Rock music in a punk rock band, but I'm a lover. I'm not a fighter. I don't want to have to fight anyone. And Waffle House is a PvP zone, right? Mm. I take out my aggression on people in World of Warcraft, not in real life over some shitty waffles, dude.
I've heard enough stories about Waffle House. I've never been to one, but I just assume I'm going to go into one and like it's going to be literally like clean cup, move down like Alice in Wonderland because there'll be a fight. I'll have to just like lift my plate while a fight like passes through.
Yeah.
I've seen more videos of fights at Waffle Houses than anywhere else on the planet. And that's including wrestling rings and boxing rings.
Oh, did you see that Waffle House video where like someone threw a chair at one of the cooks?
Oh, and she caught it
like a boss. I love that
just
video.
Like and then she was like when they were walking towards her to the door, she was just like going like, come on, bring it on,
Just like, what a boss.
I know.
And you know,
she got fired.
You know, that was not the first chair that woman ever caught.
No, yeah, that was no. The way she handled that was not the chair has been thrown at her.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that was one of many chairs I had been launched, and it was. Oh man, I love that video so much. Just the absolute power coming from that.
I know. It's just like, is that all you got? Huh? Is that all you got?
You know, if I ever, you know, everyone has like their lottery ideas. Like, if I win the lottery, I'm going to do this and that. And after, you know, giving a bunch of money to my friends and family, what I would want to do is like find some nice property in Lakewood, Ohio, which is more or less Cleveland's gay district.
Oh, nice.
It is very, very progressive, very cool, very gay, very diverse. Love Lakewood. And they have a lot of cool food options there, naturally. But I would really love to do some sort of either late hours, like open till 2:30 or 3 in the morning, or 24-hour with like a little stop changeover. Just some sort of like 24-hour late night, like upscale stoner food.
Yeah.
Just like, cause there's so many, bars, and Ohio has medicinal marijuana, which basically means it's soft legalized.
Yeah.
But, and those people got to go somewhere when it's like Friday, Saturday night and you're different shades of faded and you just want some greasy, just delicious breakfast food, because I found that most quote stoner food is just breakfast food, right?
Yeah.
So if I could just like deliver out just like really high quality, like bacon, egg and cheese sandwiches, or I don't know, like waffles, chicken and waffles, like
there, stuff. Oh, like, there you go.
Yeah. Just like the staples, but execute them to a nice caliber. And I don't mean like you have to come in, well, how many in your party, and like have it be like a whole thing, but it's just like, you know what you're getting yourself into, you know why you're here, we're going to give you the goods way better than Waffle House, and maybe have like some pinball machines in the corner. Joe, you know exactly how much I love Metallica pinball. Maybe have like one of those in the corner, and just like just have this establishment of just like, oh yeah, it's a 24-hour diner, but the food is actually like really incredible. Like that's like the dream.
You want something that you want, like that, like you don't have to wring out, you know, like you're not wringing out the grease.
Like everything from scratch, not dripping in grease, won't upset your stomach because of all like the grease and the fat, but like actual, like using like real cooking techniques to like do everything.
And no gimmicks. I had a friend of mine who I think the inside of his stomach is permanently coated purple because he went to one of those, I think it was a IHOP, and they were doing a promotion for I forget what movie it was, but it was like these pancakes covered in purple icing. It might've been the Addams Family movie.
Ew.
Like a few years ago. And yeah, they remember they would do like the Hobbit meal at Denny's, or they do the Lorax promotion.
Yeah, I remember the Lorax.
And
stuff.
Like, it's like, you don't, when you see gimmicky breakfast food, you know something's wrong. Like the era of the green ketchup, Shrek ketchup. Shrek up.
Oh, the green, I forgot about green ketchup. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, you don't want to go to like this. That's something also with LA. We have a lot of gimmicky restaurants and like eateries where it's like, do you want to go to a restaurant that prides itself on its cotton candy or its s'mores, or it's, there's a place literally like 2 miles away from me where it's all they do is ice cream sandwiches.
Ooh.
Like they literally just do ice cream sandwiches, which is great. Cool. But that's all they sell, like ice cream sandwiches. There's another place near me. I haven't been there in a while because even though the temptation is strong and my body is weak, I've been happily – there's also – it's not easy to park where there's. It's a place called Cookie Dough Dreams. Mm-hmm. And all they do is they sell – you can literally walk in and it's cookie dough that you could get in a cup and eat like ice cream. And thankfully, there's no egg in it, so it's not going to make you sick.
Okay, but I'm coming to Burbank.
You could also take it to go, and any cookie dough you don't eat, you could just put on a tray and make into cookies.
Ooh, nice.
Oh,
but they give a big wall of toppings, and you're like, all right, just pick what you want on the wall, and then we'll just mix it up for you. Here's some oats. Here's some candy. Here's some whatever. We'll make you cookie dough. You want snickerdoodles with M&Ms in it? Here you go. You want... But that's the thing, is that like LA prides itself on gimmicky places, but there aren't enough. Like, just can I just come in and just get like something that's not?
Yeah.
Don't put a flourish on it. Don't serve it to me in a shoe. Like, don't give me like.
Yeah.
That's like a new thing. Have you noticed that? That's like
no. A new thing where it's wait, like, what the fuck? Well, what do you mean this is a new thing? Serving food in a shoe?
No, like the
story from Dr. Seuss.
The gimmick of like. We're going to bring your food out, but on like a comically novelty thing. Like I think there's like a Reddit or something. Someone sent it to me, but it was a list of places where it's like, you know, we're going to give you sliders, but they're in like a bucket. Like we're just going to get a metal pail and just stack a bunch of burgers in a metal pail. Like Farmer Bill would go out to milk Bessie in the morning, but instead it's burgers and then the fries are at the bottom. Which, like, structurally is, like, I understand, like, cool, a bucket of burgers. That's fun. But you forget that if you put a bunch of burgers on top of a bunch of fries and they're hot, it's going to, in the metal, it's going to get steamy. It's going to be, like, Or, like, someone sent a charcuterie board, but it was in the shape of Maryland. Like this, which if you don't know what Maryland looks like, it just looks like a giant, like... jagged like lightning bolt kind of crescent moon shape that curves. Can you fit that on like a table like without it like sticking jutting out into the like a big wedge? Or like, here we're gonna serve you mushroom soup in like one of those glass like barometer balancers that fit, like, and it's like, no, don't give me that. Don't give me like, yeah, don't give me french fries and like a cut galosh, like a galoshes, one shoe, one rubber boot. But there's a whole, it's like a whole thing where it's like we have to, it's like putting a really beautiful cover, like folder over a really shitty essay in high school. Do you remember that? When people were like, wow, my essay is really shit. But if I make it look nice on the front, they can judge the book by its cover because that always works. But like with food, but like going back to what you were saying, like it would be so nice and refreshing to just, can I just come in and sit down and there's no like signed pictures of David Hasselhoff on the wall staring at me. And like, you're not giving me like a food that's like given like a weird movie name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want like the Goodfella burger or the like. That's a thing too. Since I live in Hollywood, you can go to places and they'll literally have like
everything. You know, is a movie.
The fun gimmicky touristy crap. Mm-hmm. I like just being, or like go to a place that doesn't have just like. Can I go to a place that isn't just filled with black countertop? Like, can I go to a place that looks like a tavern, that actually looks like a place that like firemen would go to, like after a long day, and it's like, I don't want to. It's like I don't want to go to like the Buffalo, like a Buffalo, like a converted Buffalo Wild Wings, but they didn't change any of the decor on the inside. That's a lot of LA bars, or like black countertop, music blasting, 15 televisions, but they're all playing like five different sports.
Yeah.
Like, I just,
it sounds like nice you need to come to Cleveland.
Yeah, I should come to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Come to Cleveland and.
Cleveland's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to go. I need a, that's another thing too. I'd love a reason to travel. I just don't like spending money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that.
So.
Well, you got a spot on my couch whenever you want to visit.
Oh,
it's a comfy couch.
I sleep better on couches because I grew up sleeping on like army cots and pool tables and in the back of cars. So for me, a couch is like, you know, I'll sit there and like eating Cheez-Its on a friend's couch. Is this what Paris is like? And just like eat like I'm on a chaise lounge with grapes.
I wonder what
like
the poor people are. I wonder what the poor people.
It's like, as I was saying to the Duchess just the other day, and I eat a Baby Bell cheese whole.
Morris, you know, you're getting like, the garland in a twist.
Yeah, you're getting your garland. Sorry, Morris.
There it is.
I'm on cloud nine, Morris.
I just imagine fucking like Emperor Caligula.
I'm like Nero, and I'm like somehow. It's like, ever see the movie My Cousin Vinny?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's that one guy that Vinny goes into that bar at the beginning because he finds out that someone took his girlfriend's like money. So he goes in to confront this guy. And there's just a guy at the bar who they just found a guy. And they're like, we're going to put you in the movie because you can literally stick a whole chicken leg in your mouth and just pull it clean.
What the fuck?
Like, literally, there's a scene in the movie where a guy literally is looking at Joe Pesci off screen. And you just see him going like, and then like pull a whole, like literally put a whole greasy fried chicken leg in his paw. And then he just shucks it out like a cartoon and he just leaves the bone and he's just chewing. And I'm like, is that going to be me like on someone's couch? Like,
oh my God.
Oh God.
Right. So in the last couple of minutes here, let's do a rapid fire, right?
Okay.
So let's just shout out some menu items for this proposed 24-hour upscale stoner food with pinball establishment.
Pancakes with whipped cream, also waffles with whipped cream.
Good.
How about this? It literally just is, it just says just eggs, and then in the description it is just eggs.
It's literally and just eggs.
Get eggs, and you literally just get a plate of eggs
with your choice of
no frills, no chills, nothing extraordinary. But then you balance it out, so you get that, and then on the other side you get a whole something just called a whole lot of eggs.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it's just a lot of eggs, and then you get the, but you get like bacon, ham, sausage,
toast.
Toast,
yeah,
all this stuff, hash browns with peppers in it, nuts, like crazy.
Yeah, and actual chocolate milk, not plain milk with Hershey syrup in it that they don't stir enough, like Waffle House does. Actual chocolate milk.
Actual chocolate milk.
Wait, when you say actual chocolate milk, you mean that what you just described isn't actual chocolate milk?
No,
you mean
it's
like
not.
You mean like kindergarten, like
in the cardboard carton,
cardboard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cardboard container chocolate milk?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That chocolate milk.
I prefer the Hershey syrup with milk.
It just doesn't taste right.
So,
I mean, you can use it
so
use
overly
it
sugared.
Use it on ice cream all you want, but no.
It's our first argument that breaks out on this podcast.
Yeah, it's true.
How dare you? This thing, what it is, it's like they put the chocolate in the milk, but it's had time to live in there for a little too long. It's outstayed its welcome. So it's no longer milk and it's no longer chocolate. It's like a whole nother thing.
It's like a
whenever I've drank chocolate milk out of the carton, like in school, I can't. Like, do what I will love though.
What?
If they literally are like, can I have a chocolate milk? Even though it's technically not chocolate milk, it's chocolate drink because there's no actual milk in it. Like, give me a Yoo-Hoo.
Just give me a Yoo-Hoo. Love Yoo-Hoo.
Yeah,
Yoo-Hoo
yeah.
is like, that's the childhood thing. Like, when I think of chocolate milk, even though there's no milk in it, I think
right.
of Yoo-Hoo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, disrespect to Yoo-Hoo. I love Yoo-Hoo, yeah. I haven't had that.
Yeah.
I should go get some of that.
Yeah, I kind of want that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it has to be in the glass, that glass bottle.
The glass one. Do they still do that?
Some places still do it.
They still have that.
I mean, you know, like a lot of places, everything's like plastic now. So it's like, I would love like a bottle, like an old school, like Coke bottle, man. Ugh, I miss those.
We live in Southern California. So we have Mexican Coke.
It's like, I love Mexican Coke.
They literally call it on the menu. It's like Mexican Coke. We don't call
Mexican
it.
Mexican Coca-Cola, to be clear, not Mexican cocaine. Mexican Coca-Cola. Well,
I feel like that's a given, Joe.
You never know. You never know.
You never really know. You hope, but you never really know. But I'm trying to think of something else that might be good on that menu.
I think some staples like burgers, sliders, pizza, chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffles is a must.
I'm thinking about breakfast. Mm. And for me, I've never seen a platter. You know, it's something that you, because the thing is, that's the thing. Ever go into a diner and you're like, oh man, I know it comes with pancakes and I can get French toast, but oh, waffles are so good. And you have like that moment and you always regret, like, you get the French toast, but you wish you got the waffles, or you got the waffles, but you wish you got the French pancakes, whatever. Just a platter where you get one of each.
Ooh, the carb platter.
Ever think about that? Yeah, give me literally take a third of a pancake, a third of a waffle, and a third of a French toast.
What the fuck?
And sew them together somehow with some edible string. Give me like a Franken breakfast, like, so I could get a little bit of a taste of, if you can make a pancake, pancake French toast waffle combo, I would be like.
That,
I mean, you don't even have to link them together.
You can do like a sandwich,
just bread with bread, like the bread sandwich.
Yeah, you got like waffle, French toast, pancake. There you go.
But yeah, do you pick it up or do you knife and fork it? That's the question.
Well, the thing about my friend got me into this. My one of my good friends, like, I pick up and I dip. Mm-hmm. If I get a waffle, I'll pick it up and dip it. I'm not going to pour into the little, even though they got the cute little pockets, which are perfect for the serve it. I actually prefer to dip it, pick it up and dip it now. But I would want to get like, give me like a, where it looks like a sectional plate almost, but it's like pancake.
You want
French
a Zoo Pals for and the stoner restaurant? I was going
to say, put it on a fucking Zoo Pals plate and you put a little reservoir in the middle for the syrup, and then you just, You pick and choose. You go around the world, kind of like a world showcase thing.
That's a world's fair of carbs.
You know, like, you're like, yeah, you do like, or you can do mix it up. You get the, you have the three standards, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit of breakfast. But then you can also add in like crepes if you really wanted to. If you wanted to get super fancy, you go crepe. Go crepe or go home. This is something. I want you to have on the menu the world's best fruit salad.
Done.
Because every time I've gone to a diner, I've gotten fruit salad. Shit. Or like, do you want to get some fruit? It's like, wow, you gave me two soft grapes and literally underripened honeydew and mango, a cantaloupe.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you literally pride yourself. Put it on like, have sell t-shirts at near checkout.
Edible fruit salad. Mints.
It's like the best diner fruit salad, and you get it, and you're like, oh my god, it doesn't have any of the garbage fruit in it, and it's all it hasn't been sitting in a basin covered in like saran wrap that's never been closed. Like that's the thing. Every time I've gone to a diner and gotten fruit, usually as a regret, and I always say, you know what, I'm going to give it a chance, and then you say, oh, I literally got like one half of a piece of pineapple and an overripe grape, and then just get like some good stuff. Get it. Get like, I don't know, a fruit cup and syrup. I don't know. Just go to town.
Just go hog wild with it.
Make them cry. Make them have them eat like the guy from Ratatouille, where they take a bite of a fruit salad and they literally call back to a day that they've never experienced, which was getting a fruit cup. And then say, wow, this establishment, this eatery that I walked into has surpassed my expectation, and it is a world of firsts. Walking in, you experience something for the first time, and it won't be diarrhea. It won't be food poisoning. It'll be like legit, like, oh my God, like quality food. It knows exactly what I want, gives me options galore, and their fruit salad is really good.
Mike, I need you to do something for me.
You will literally, there will people be lining up to get the fruit cup. They'll literally be like, you'll never have to cook a French fry
ever.
Or like ever. Because you always say like you could get French fries, you can get fruit, and people are going to be like, you could literally change the world. Make them eat healthier.
With my stoner and breakfast food.
Or you do the opposite thing, which was the other idea I had. It was just go both ways, get the side, deep fry the fruit cup. Just everything is fry. Fry the pineapple, the honeydew, the cantaloupe, the grapes even. Just fry them. And then you get a little cup. And it's all individually fried pieces of fruit.
What I need you to do. Do you remember in the 50s and 60s on The Wonderful World?
Because I am that old, yes.
No.
I do remember.
No. I just know because you're a Disney buff. But The Wonderful World of Disney, where Walt would come out and he would put on his Uncle Walt persona. And he would talk very emphatically about the upcoming Epcot.
Even though he was dyslexic and he couldn't read the cue cards that were written for him, he had to do his lines over and over again.
Was dyslexic.
Yeah, he was dyslexic. Yeah, Walt Disney was dyslexic.
How about that?
Yeah.
But he would just like talk about like...
That's why the D looks like a G.
Because I am dyslexic, I've been reading it as Gizney since I was 3 years old.
It sounds like D, but it looks like G.
It looks like a G. But deadass, like, him talking about, like, well, if you come on down after you watch this program, you should check out Disney World's first experimental, what's the fucking acronym?
Experimental Prototype City of Tomorrow?
That one. If you come down to Experimental Prototype City of Tomorrow, you can come down to our 24-hour diner. This is where you come after a night full of sin and lust.
Sin and lust. I love it.
You can get very carb-heavy food in the shape of Mickey Mouse.
I was literally about to say, because I remember going down to Disney World, and they had, like, in the actual Epcot, the one that's not a city, but it's just, like, a bunch of pavilions nobody wants to walk into.
Really?
But they pass by to go drink at the World Showcase.
Mm-hmm.
You go to like the one that like makes vegetables, but it's like, oh, you can get cucumbers and they grow them in like Mickey tubes. So they grow to the shape of Mickey. So when they cut all the vegetables, they have their Mickey silhouetted.
That's really cool. I'm not going to lie. That's pretty cool. That's really cool.
I mean, I will say, have you seen them where they grow? It's a thing now. People, you could actually buy pumpkins at Halloween where they grow them inside of
like a mold
shaped like skulls.
Okay, like I need to get on that plan.
There's people who do it with watermelons too in the summer. Like you get like the square watermelon, but they have ones where they literally put like it's like Boris Karloff Frankenstein, but they put the seed in it and then they water it and then it grows and forms exactly out to the mold. And then they take it out and it's like literally a gourd.
This is the perfect full circle because we started talking about like mold making and casting things in resin at the beginning of the episode, and here we are.
Let's cast fruit salad.
And that was not planned, dear listeners. It just sort of happened.
Nothing on this show is planned. I feel like everyone catches that vibe. It is designed for tangents, and we have successfully completed that mission.
Yes.
We are at...
I know that we're going to end this thing right now, I got a drink. I got a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of been wanting to say this, but now is a good time to say it. And related to your diner idea, this is an idea that I don't want you to have.
Oh, God.
Restaurant.
Okay.
All right. So I got a Cherry Coke. I went to Carl's Jr. while running errands. And I got a Cherry Coke, and I've never experienced this before. Have you ever tasted something that tastes like a smell?
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like when you taste something.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, wow, no.
I've never tasted that before, but I have smelt it before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how. I really don't know how. This Cherry Coke, have you ever smelled like the inside of like a fast food joint and you could smell the burger?
Yeah.
And you could smell the sesame seed bun and you could smell the beef cooking and you could smell.
Yeah, that's your drink right now.
It tastes like 80s fast food restaurant interior.
And it's a 40-year vintage Cherry Coke.
Yeah. Ooh, it's got all that delicious. Yes, please. Could I have
tannic acid?
Can I have a tab with extra ice, please? Please give me my Jolt Cola.
Give me my Surge.
Oh God, I did an animated thing once where it was Surge, just a can of Surge, and it's the song. It's just a slow zoom in on a can of Surge with the song "Baby Come Back" played over it, and as the song plays, a little like drop of Surge goes down the can, and when it gets to the bottom, you hear fizzling, and then it eats away literally at the table below it because that stuff was like acid.
Yeah,
that stuff was filled with so many chemicals that thing. I don't know how it could be contained inside of that aluminum can, but they figured out a way.
It's like fucking uranium waste.
It's literally like if you pour that on a turtle, you will get crime fighting turtles.
I was really worried where you're going with that.
I could have stopped there. You know, if I poured this Surge soda on a turtle and then just stop and then just not follow it up with anything.
Anywho, yes, I'll let you continue. Bikers are back on the fucking main road again. God damn it. Sorry.
Put a piano wire across your nose.
Jesus Christ. That's really fucked up.
That'll show them.
That'll show them.
Oh my God.
Summer in the Midwest, the constant sound of lawnmowers and motorbikes. But we need to get out of here because we are a little over an hour. Let's talk about who we are, where you can find us. Mike, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, you can find me at the closest institution that'll hold someone who thinks of the horrible things that I think of all the time.
IMDb.
IMDb, exactly. Yeah. But you can find me on Twitter. My Twitter is @aguywhodraws. I post way too much there. You could also find me on Instagram, Michael J. Rocco, RUOCCO, on Instagram. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Okay. I'm not really much on social media, but so you can find me here.
Find you where?
Find me on this podcast. So.
All right. And I have been Aaron Jade Eigel. You can listen to my band, hopefully, or at least you can visit the website by the time this episode comes out, dxbf.club. Listen to Dead Ex-Boyfriends Club. That's my primary social media. Or you can go to Solder and Stand Mixer on Instagram, where I post all of my fun little Warhammer projects and my cooking and all that good stuff.
Awesome.
All right. So that is it for this week. Any closing thoughts?
No, just very interested that how much of Resident Evil was ripped off by Wildcard. So that's the read the books, folks.
Read the books.
Just kidding, right. Just kidding, Resident Evil fans. But it's still kind of interesting. So
it is. All right, we'll see you next time, everyone. Bye.
All right,
take care.
Bye.
Take care, all.
Bye.